From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Secession is not off the St. Kitts Nevis election agenda, according to the Nevisian Premier. Is there a criminal element in the Bahamas police force and trying to get World Trade talks moving again after failure in Seattle? I'm Oren Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. The Premier of Nevis, Van Samery, has told BBC Caribbean Report that the issue of secession has not gone away, and it will be part of his party's electoral strategy. The Prime Minister of St. Kitts and Nevis, Denzil Douglas, had said that secession will not figure in the elections on March the 3rd. Mr. Emery's push to separate from the Federation with St. Kitts was narrowly defeated in a referendum several years ago. A majority of Nevisians said yes, but it was less than the two-thirds needed. For Mr. Emery, the elections will see a change of strategy rather than a change of mind.
I think you would recognize, and everybody would recognize, that we've gone through a serious process of going through the constitutional motion of seeking independence for Nevis, which narrowly failed. Now, that is something that we cannot put on the back burner. We, however, will be going out and presenting to the people the issue that this party, CCM, which I lead and which is in government in Nevis, will seek to get all the seats in Nevis so that we can present a unified position in looking after the interests of Nevis. And if that means that we have to seek to become independent again, I don't think that is something that we can rule out. I don't think anybody in Nevis will rule that out.
But didn't the referendum settle the issue?
The referendum threw up a lot of questions. It threw up certainly that the people of Nevis are dissatisfied with the arrangement in which and the relationship with St. Kitts, and that there are a number of matters which have to be settled, and those matters have not been settled. And if they're not settled, then they will always surface at one time or another.
What are those matters?
Well, the matter of the financial arrangements, the matter of control of some aspects of development legislation which affect and impinge on the development of Nevis, over which the Nevis administration has control, and which clearly can impede or advance the progress if it is not dealt with properly. And for the Nevis administration, having responsibility for paying its civil servants and ensuring that there's development in Nevis, and having still to be at the behest of the national government, you know, can create some bottlenecks. Those matters must be put to rest.
So if the Prime Minister, Dr. Douglas, was to say to you, these are my proposals for improving the relationship between the two islands, would you then say that there is no need for secession?
I'm not going to say that, because that is something which the people will have to decide. I am only the leader of the party. I articulate, yes, the wishes which we think the people have, but any matter will still have to be referred to the people on the matter of independence. I am not indicating that we will churn up or even, you know, create anything in the immediate future to do with secession. But I'm saying those issues have to be looked at because they're critical to us.
Nevisian Premier Van Samery. A 33-year-old man is being held in custody in the Bahamas following the death of two policemen. The police are hoping that the man who fled the scene of the crime yesterday could help them with their inquiries into the death of the policeman, one of whom was a robbery suspect. The incident has led Bahamians to question the integrity of the force. Jessica Robertson reports.
The Royal Bahamas Police Force has been working hard in recent months to rebuild credibility with the public. Community policing efforts are on the rise, and officers credit the public with much of their success in solving recent crimes. But a devastating Valentine's Day shooting involving three police officers may have dealt a heavy blow to the force. Not only are two officers, Constable Jeffrey Tucker and Constable Gerald Monville, dead, making 3 in 10 days, but questions remain as to what exactly happened in the patrol car. What they do know is that Officer Tucker and his partner arrested Monville and another as yet unidentified man for suspicious behavior. The off-duty officer was holding a mask, gloves, and tools they felt could be used for breaking and entering. As the patrol car pulled off, gunshots were fired. Injured Officer Johnson fled, as did the unidentified suspect. A short while later, Officers Tucker and Monville were found dead in the car. Police are still investigating, but meanwhile, the public is forming their own opinions on the confidence in the force. Some say not all officers should be judged by the actions of one man, but others fear there is no hope.
I think that the public is already discouraged by the police. I think that the public generally feels that there is a lot of corruption in the police force. And yesterday, I think that will only add to it to bring down the public morale and their faith in the police system.
I got more faith in them. Well, at least police caught police doing wrong, and it wasn't a pat on the back and let them slide by. It's unfortunate that the culprit got killed on a hard-working officer, but it adds that the police still could do their work in this country.
It is common practice in the Bahamas for police officers to moonlight as security guards. Manville was reportedly recently fired as a security guard at the food store his colleagues thought he intended to rob. In Parliament yesterday, Prime Minister Hubert Ingram called on all businesses to stop hiring officers without permission of the Commissioner of Police. In Nassau, Bahamas, I'm Jessica Robertson for BBC Caribbean Report.
A member of the Netherlands Antilles Parliament is calling a meeting of MPs and insurance executives to discuss what he says are alarming developments in insurance coverage. A second company has pulled out of St. Martin, saying it has become too expensive to cover hurricane damage. ING left the business after Hurricane Lenny last year. The Egon Enya Group withdrew in 1996 after Hurricane Louise the previous year. MP Frank Mingo is the man proposing the crisis meeting. I asked him if the people affected managed to settle their claims before ING withdrew.
Yes, the company has, to my knowledge, has been settling the claims. That is not going to be a point. However, they wanted to cut their losses and leave. So they announced on December 7th that they were going to withdraw from the insurance market covering damages for catastrophe. It does not mean that they will not continue in the other branches of insurance, such as life insurance and other risk insurance.
So if they're honoring the policies and then withdrawing, what's wrong with that?
People in these islands in the Caribbean area, which is prone to natural disasters such as hurricanes every year, if they take out a loan at a financial institution like a bank, to build a home or to build a building, then that institution requires coverage in case of damage of a catastrophe by natural disaster. By a big insurance company pulling out of the market now, they are setting a trend which could have severe consequences for investors and people who want to invest in homes and in buildings.
But you can't make them stay if they figure this is a no-win situation for them, particularly if, as you said, they intend to settle up before they go.
It was never the intention to put them under pressure to stay if they do not want to stay, because they themselves, ING Fatim, in the hearing said that it was a business decision. But it is a model case, not only for St. Martin, but probably for the entire Caribbean. We are getting the signal that big companies are pulling out and do not want to cover damages for catastrophes anymore in the Caribbean, because it is a high-risk area as far as hurricanes are concerned. If that is going to be the case in the future, and looking at the predictions for the weather, then we will have to try and develop policies in the Caribbean, and especially on St. Martin, in which we will upgrade building codes and make our buildings stronger so that we will be less dependent on coverage for catastrophes.
Shouldn't that have been the case before?
It should have, but it doesn't mean that because we are late now that we shouldn't do something about it.
Do I hear you saying then that people were not as careful with building codes as they could have been because they figured that the insurance company will pay?
No, but I think there was a time, quite a long period of time, in which we were not severely hit by hurricanes. I think the very rapid development, specifically on the island of St. Martin, led us away from to build stronger and to build more careful according to better buildings resistant to hurricane forces.
Netherlands Antilles MP Frank Mingo. The head of the World Trade Organization, Mike Moore, is to make a speech in a few hours' time in which he's likely to call for the early launch of a new round of free trade talks. Mr. Moore will be addressing the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, or UNCTAD, in Bangkok. It's the first meeting of economic ministers since the WTO meeting in Seattle last year broke up after it failed to launch a new trade round Here's Ahmed Joseph.
Mike Moore had hoped he would already be into the early stages of a new round of trade liberalization talks. Instead, he's trying to pick up the pieces after the Seattle meeting ended amid sometimes violent protests on the street and disarray in the conference chamber.
We failed to get agreement because the governments who own this, ministers elected who own it, could not reach an agreement on a number of areas. It wasn't ripe. That's sad. And the people who lose the most, in my view, out of this are the countries from developing countries who wanted more help on implementation, least developed countries that wanted market access. We're working on current negotiations mandated by governments on agriculture and services. We hope that over the next few weeks we can begin to work to see if we can do more for the least developed countries and market access, whether we can build the capacity of smaller countries to engage.
Mr. Moore has been trying to mediate across a divide that was primarily between rich and poor countries. The two groups had very different ideas about what they wanted on the negotiating agenda for the proposed round. The United States and Europe wanted the WTO to establish a working group to look at the relationship between trade and basic work standards, such as child and forced labour. The developing countries thought this was a covert attempt to erect new barriers to their goods. Some countries, like Jamaica, also wanted better access for their textiles and clothing to the richer countries. Many developing nations wanted the WTO to reconsider earlier agreements, including an accord on patents and copyright, which they say makes it harder for them to produce cheap medicines. Mr. Moore will try to negotiate a path through these disputes, and observers will be looking to his speech for some indication of the progress he's making. There'll also be people in his audience from development and environmental lobby groups who don't want a trade negotiating round to be launched at all. They say that further trade moves would damage the environment and deepen poverty in the developing world.
That report was by Emma Joseph. St. Lucia's foreign minister is backing a bid by Cuba to join the African, Caribbean and Pacific group of countries. The SCP has just renegotiated a new trade and aid agreement with the European Union that would follow on from the Lomé agreement. George Odlum's statement of support came during a visit by the Cuban foreign minister, Felipe Perez Roque, who's on an official tour of 10 Caribbean countries.
Europe is at the moment very sensitive to the fact that a lot of its members are having direct trade and investment relationships with Cuba. For example, even Spain has hotels in Cuba. And broadly, Canada has a lot of investments in cobalt and mining in Cuba. A lot of European countries are building hotels in Cuba. So the relationship is getting very close, and they have appreciated that the CARICOM is very fixed in their determination to have Cuba as a part of the Caribbean area.
George Odlum, St. Lucia's foreign minister. Grenada is adding its voice to the debate about the six-year-old Cuban shipwreck survivor, Elian Gonzalez. Senator Chester Humphrey has tabled a motion in the upper house of parliament urging the U.S. government to let Elian return to Cuba. The government of Keith Mitchell has said that it will support the motion. Lou Smith has the story.
Senator Humphrey, who speaks for Labour in the upper house, is a known ally of the Cuban government and President Castro in particular. And some observers here say he sees an opportunity to make mileage out of a situation which, for once, seems to put the White House in Washington and Havana on the same side. Senator Humphrey, who leads one of the most powerful unions in Grenada, feels his country folks should show solidarity with the Cuban people by joining with the voices of international law and order.
I intend to bring a resolution in the Senate, associating the Senate, as it were, with what is now an international issue upon which many international spokesmen, presidents, and governments have spoken. And I think as an independent country in the Caribbean, where this problem has arisen, we ought not to say anything less.
Young Elian was shipwrecked off the Florida coast late last year as his mother and several others sought greener pastures in the United States. This has led to a custody battle between Castro opponents in Havana and the American and Cuban governments. Senator Humphrey says he sees no reason why his Senate colleagues should not support his resolution.
I could see no material basis for an objection to a thing that is deeply humanitarian. This resolution is not an unfriendly act to the United States.
Senator Humphrey could bank on the support of at least one senator, Dr. Terry Marischal, who has already voiced similar sentiments. For BBC Caribbean Report, I am Lou Smith in St. George's.
That's our program today. Before we go, here's a quick reminder.
This and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
I'm Oren Gordon saying goodbye from London.